The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Markets zig and zag on every headline. Bulls try but fail miserably. Goldman Sachs gives back all the gains since the election. We have listener questions and lots to talk about. All this and much more on episode number 592 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, here we are. It is December 16th, 2018, coming into the end of the year when we did, in fact, hope for a little bit of a better move towards the end. This is Andrew Horowitz, and I am the host of this show, the Disciplined Investor Podcast, as well as the co-host of DH Unplugged, where you can listen to myself and John C. Dvorak each and every week talking about just a whole smattering of items that are related to markets, finance, investments, news, business, politics. We go over all of it and relate it back to the markets. A little bit of a different kind of show there. Plus, we play some really great games with the audience as a chat room. Make sure to check that out. But here we are. It is the final couple of weeks coming into the end of this year, 2018. And a lot of questions about, well, what's going to be for 2019? Because already there's some grumblings about the potential for, well, some kind of a recession, growth slowdown, something that's in the cards, in particular, if we can't get any resolution at all with regard to these tariffs. So there's a lot of head scratching going on right now, a lot of commentary that seems to be changing around, earnings that are being brought down a bit compared to where they were maybe just 6 months ago, maybe even 3 months ago. But before we get into the market news, things that are going on, things that we got to look forward to, I wanted to just take a couple of minutes and talk to you a little bit about something that I've been doing. And this time of year, I'm probably not alone. You probably do a good amount of this also. It's a time where I look back, do a little bit of study of what happened during the last year. And I really want to talk more about right now this particular podcast. And I spent some time looking at our guest list and the discussions that we had throughout this entire year. And I wanted to see how it evolved, what changed, what were the major themes. I got to tell you, in terms of the guest list, it keeps getting better and better all the time. In terms of the emails, comments, suggestions, book suggestions, guest suggestions, and all the really great reviews that you've sent me. First of all, it means a lot to me, but it really ramped up dramatically this year. And I think that there has been just first of all, we know that podcasting, generally speaking, has become a medium that has been really accepted by people that are looking for alternative opportunities to listen to something, to watch something that is not necessarily mainstream media. And for all the reasons that we know that over the last number of years, there seems to be an embedded bias in much of the mainstream media. You get that with some podcasts as well. Here, we try to stay neutral as best as possible, looking at all the information objectively and then trying to decipher it and then put it into a usable fashion, what we can do and how we can use it. Myself, you as the listeners, in our process of investing and our security for our financial future. So yeah, it's that time of year I spend reflecting on all sorts of things. I look at what I personally did right, what we did right as a firm, what we got right, what we got wrong, how to improve basically everything across all areas. So what I wanted to talk to you now about was what I was thinking about on how I see 2019 play out for the show, for this podcast, and what I'm thinking. And it's not fully flushed out right now, but I'll tell you that my commitment to you is that we're going to keep improving it. We're keep improving the content in this show, continue with information and insights, education, and hopefully doing it in a way that's entertaining, because, you know, that's part of it, right? We want to make sure that we have a little bit of entertainment. It's easy to listen to. We're not going to go so heady that people just don't understand. There's plenty of shows out there that are really heady. But the whole point here is, while we know we can do that, there's no reason to do that. The whole point here is for education. It's for information. It's for getting a quick dose of what happened during the week, what we're looking at in particular, how we're drilling down some of the data that we find, and doing that not only from me only, but from some great guests out there that are sometimes not just your standard guests. And if you've been listening for any time at all, you know what I'm talking about. You know that we bring on some really interesting people. Every once in a while, we got a dud. It happens. Usually that means they don't come on again. The ones that I find the most fascinating, I bring on over and over for a while to really flush out all of the information that they know, how they can impart to us. And by the way, just to let you know, this process is not just selfless. It's not just, oh, I'm doing this for my listeners. You know, I get a great education. I get great insight from many of these guests that probably if I didn't do a podcast, if I didn't have the access to these kinds of really great minds out there, that how would I get that? So it's really good for me as well. So I'm telling you, it's not selfish, but it's not selfish. So it's a process that helps all of us. And I'm pretty much working as the conduit to provide all that. So I want to thank you for all the things that you've helped me with. All, again, the suggestions, the comments, the areas that you correct me on, and, you know, all the emails that come in, all the great everything. I really want to say that truly, I appreciate you for helping me produce this on a regular basis. Give me the desire to spend time and a lot of time on working on what we're going to talk about each and every week. I also have to thank and give a shout out to my wife, Jill, because you know what? She puts up with me. She puts up with a lot of long hours where I'm dealing with podcast items, late nights, weekends. And it's a process that is something that I really find is core to what I do on a regular basis. We've been doing this for over 10 years. So it's not just a flash in the pan. Hey, I'm going to produce a podcast. There is a process. There is a desire. There's a lot of love that goes into this. I got to tell you something. So I hope you feel it. I hope this isn't too weirdly mushy. I hope that you're getting a lot out of it. And I hope that you continue listening and telling people about it on a regular basis. Make sure that if you are getting something out of this, if you find it educational, entertaining, or any of the above, make sure to tell your friends. Send them a link. Because that's how this all really, we get to spread the word about how great this all is. And I was also looking at, as I was going through this little reflection process, I was looking at some of the things that we rolled out last year and some of the things we did to improve the podcast. There's a lot of little things that are behind the scenes kind of work that was done, but we did a major makeover of the Disciplined Investor podcast website, or the website for the Disciplined Investor, where you could actually do a lot more searching for particular guests or topics or things of that nature. It's all on there. You can see a very clean list with searchable features. We added some other really neat clouds of guest list cloud, which kind of gives you a you know, who's been on the most over time, et cetera. We got in a lot of outside the box guests this year that we wouldn't have. The most recent one was Arthur Herman, where he was talking about his book in World War II and how the businesses and American business really was behind the whole the growth of the building of planes and the arsenal of democracy that was built up for World War II. And probably without that, we could be talking about the man in the high castle. So there was a lot of that I tried to bring in also a little bit outside, still related to the environment of business. And we also did some book giveaways this year, which we're continuing on. Ramped up the Ask Andrew section of the DisciplinedInvestor.com and also introduced and really provided a full-blown opportunity through Investology, which is our take on robo-advice, which is more of a combination of technology enhancement to an advisor-crafted portfolio. And that was a big thing that we did this year. And that we got a lot of really good comments on how that is all structured in terms of the onboarding, the risk tolerance questionnaires, a lot different than you'll see from your traditional robo style of, you know, sites. I think there's a lot more depth there. So, and a bit of a different way of investing. So it's something that incorporates a lot of what we do for Horowitz and Company, for our global allocations, inside of a much lower entry point. And that was all predicated and created due to the demand from this show. So a lot of people have said, you know, Andrew, I'd like to do some work with you. And, you know, you have a $500,000 minimum, for example, on your global allocations. Well, that's something I really would like to do, but I only have X amount of dollars. You know, $35,000, $75,000, $10,000. So that's why we created it. So that is a direct offshoot of the show, of what was asked and requested. So again, this two-way street and this synergistic relationship that we have here as, quote, host here, Andrew Horowitz, and listener, you, coming together to create some really cool things and some great opportunities for learning and really hopeful financial security and stability over your lifetime. So thank you. I can't thank you enough. This is not the last show of the year, but don't worry about that. We have a few more coming. We have a best of coming as well, which we clipped some, I don't know, 5, 6, 7, maybe a little bit more, less, somewhere around there, of some of the conversations we had throughout the year of 2018 and brought it together. And that will probably be right at the end of the year. We'll have the best of show that will go there. We were also brought up, I think there was a recent tweet that the best podcast shows of 2008, Meb Faber. He put together a list of some really great, a great list of that. We could find that over on Twitter. I'll try to put that somewhere out so you can take a look at that. But some of the greatest episodes, I think 3 episodes of ours came up with making that list. And I was very pleased to see that as well. So before we get into what's going on this week, what we have as an outlook, how the markets did, et cetera, I thought I'd just mention, because I've been asked this a lot and questions come in like, Andrew, you know, what do you do for information? What do you use for your research? What are you looking at for your news? How are you getting, you know, information that's clean and crisp and that you can trust and you can rely on? So I'll just mention a couple of things here that we use. This is not a full list, but it is just a few things that we use on a regular basis, on a daily basis that I really focus on and to give me information, whether it's news and breaking news and analysis on things like earnings or economics. Well, I really rely on briefing.com. That's for the analysis. I mean, there's other places I pull data from so we could do our own internal analysis. But on the spot information, why something's happening, why, for example, a quick analysis on an earnings on a stock, they're pretty good at giving me a quick blast of, okay, company XYZ, you know, missed by 2 cents on earnings, but, you know, beat on revenue and their margins did this and that happened here. Stock expected to move because of this. And then they give you a lowdown on what was the, you know, the call, the information, the core information that was derived from the call. So they have a few different levels of subscriptions available. The Briefing Trader is the one that I use. And I got to tell you, for the price, what it is, it's a bargain. It's not really that expensive, but they have a freebie, I believe, out there. They have maybe 3 or 4 different levels of subscriptions that you can get. And I just check it out. This, it must be a free one out there. Check out at least something for a period of time and see if you like it, because I think it's great. I keep up on my screen at all times the Dual in Play. It's called Dual in Play. And I put on the left-hand side some of the core economic information and information outside markets that may be moving things. On the right-hand side, I have a scrolling piece on all the hot topics that are really trending. And it doesn't, it's not like one of these that's just flashing by so fast that you can't stop it. I mean, they come out every couple of minutes of what's going on. If you see, for example, a major spike in the market out of nowhere, usually they're like, okay, well, this is what happened. This is what we're hearing. You see a stock that all of a sudden starts to roll over hard out of nowhere, you'll say, oh, well, maybe it was because this short seller just came out with a piece and this being distributed, or some hedge funds are starting to lighten up on positions that we're hearing about from here or there, or again, whatever it may be. And anticipation of things like economic news, what's happening. So good stuff there. In fact, when we add that to some of my own data that we pull in from a company called YCharts, and we utilize a lot of the API that pulls things into Excel. So I generate these spreadsheets that have charts and trends and graphs that give me all the information I want. I have several of them that either are based on corporate profitability issues, or maybe just one spreadsheet that is all about economics, or maybe one that is comparing some mutual fund core data that I want to look at, or some charts on total returns that are looking at core sectors of ETFs. I mean, there's a lot of different ways you can do the same thing, but the data is there and you can pull it over to Excel and do whatever you want with it. Calculate it any way you want. And I do a lot of that. And then Morningstar, I use for a lot of the data and information and insight into specifically mutual funds. And TradeStation for my core charting program. I've talked about TradeStation many times before, but TradeStation really has a, I think, one of the better platforms that not only can you use it right out of the box for charts and graphs and all the different indicators they have, whether it's as simple as a moving average all the way through some pretty advanced Bollinger Bands and stochastics or various iterations of any of those. There's tons of them. They have these show me deals where it says like, hey, show me the low of the year on this. It just marks it on the chart for you. Then they have their radar screen, which is like an Excel spreadsheet that's ticking, and you can put in all sorts of indicators there as well to give you a full list of, let's say, you know, 300, 400 stocks and who's breaking over their 50-day moving average, or what stock is hitting a 52-week low, or what stock is seeing a rip in the last 2 minutes. Give me a sortable list that's kind of going there. And they have these hot lists that are there like that. And then you could write your own code as well. Takes a little bit of learning, little process to understand what's going on with their coding and how you can actually write in your own code and utilize some of their quick starts to actually do it. But this, if you want to and you have an idea, I said, you know, I'm thinking I'd like an indicator that will do this. Well, you can build that. They have something called Easy Language. And Easy Language helps you build all of these kinds of things. Again, there's a lot of documentation, plus they have courses that will help you. So that's kind of a quick overview of the things that I use on a regular, like daily, all the time. That's what's always, I mean, I have other things in the background that I may check and look at and use and news areas and sources, but the things that I am watching on a regular basis, I get everything I need right there. So if you want, check those out. I think most of those will probably have some free trials, et cetera. But there's a lot of questions that did come in with that and ask me about that. So I thought I would give you that towards this time of year. So I wanted to also go over some of the things that are happening and happened this week and give you kind of the lowdown, the down low on what's happening with markets right now. And I took a lot of this information actually from Briefing. So I kind of did the research on this, put it together, and I want to kind of give you some of the insight of what they're saying, because as I told you, I really like them, and also some of my own inputs on here. But as we know that, generally speaking, Wall Street really had another rough week. So there was this whole uncertainty that is continuing to crop up related to things like politics and trade, economic growth, and the whole worry about interest rates. And in particular, we're going to be seeing a meeting next week where the expectation is that there is going to be another rate hike in December, even though we've seen some backing off of the idea that, well, yeah, this is a lock guarantee done deal. For a while, we were over 90, even 95%, I think I saw, on Fed Fund futures expectations of a rate hike in December. Well, what happened is over the last few weeks, as the markets came down, as some of the Fed speakers came out a little more dovish than usual, as compared to where they were maybe 3 or 4 months ago, that expectation and the bet on this rate hike has sloped down a little bit, but still, I think it's close to 80% right now. So buyers were in a little bit of a cranky mood, not desiring really to get too involved. And of course, not to mention, why would you want to if we're seeing these intraday swings that are absolutely, you know, nauseating? So a lot of people are saying, you know what, let me just wait till this whole thing calms down before I really get in there. Why should I bother trying to pick a bottom? Why should I bother really trying to get too active right now and put money to work if we're seeing this kind of extreme volatility? Even though there are some interesting levels that are being seen recently in terms of some possible bottoming action, some oversold indications. Why do I want to really say I'm going to, you know, if I'm a long-term buyer, why, maybe there's some better prices that I'll get in the future. So a lot of people are just kind of sitting on the sidelines right now. And we saw that on Friday, the S&P fell 1.9%, which now took its monthly loss down to 5.8% for December. One of the worst Decembers in history or in recent history. And we saw that also this was on top of and predicated and maybe pushed by the fact that this global growth concern continues to bubble under the surface, because you're seeing that a lot of areas in Europe and in Asia are starting to show some slowing that's significant. The Dow Jones closed down about 2%. The NASDAQ lost about 2.3%. The Russell was down 1.5%, the small caps. And for the month so far, you got the Dow down 5.6, the NASDAQ 5.7, and the Russell small caps are off by 8%, hitting a 15-month low. If you take a look at the chart on the Russell, not looking so good after that nice run-up. And on Friday, we saw that a lot of this selling started over in China. You know, they are the second largest economy in the world. And there was a real concern about some real slowdown in their overall economics. We saw that their industrial production and retail sales data was not at all where anyone had expected to be. And there was also some slowdown in the European market. So follow on from when the markets in Asia closed down after these disappointing news items. And then all of a sudden you have what's going on in Europe and some slowing down there. It is a problem. We also saw on Friday, I'm just focusing on Friday here for a second, and we'll get into the whole week in a moment. But on Friday, there was a couple of outliers that really had markets down pretty hard. For example, Johnson & Johnson. There was a report that now it seems that Johnson & Johnson, the management company, knew for years, decades, that there was asbestos in its baby powder. Well, that's not good. We know how unhealthy asbestos is, and now all of a sudden there's this thought that J&J knew and had not disclosed, and probably they didn't want to disclose. We know because this is what happens when you disclose something like this. Of course, the company said, oh, absolutely not. This report that's being put out is not correct, and we're going to fight it, and we'll use every means possible to clear our name, all that good stuff. But this took the stock down about 10%. Then we saw things like Adobe Systems come out with earnings, and it was generally a good report, but not as good as it could have been to keep the stock as high as it has been. The outlook was a little bit light also. Stock was down over 7%. And there's some downgrades of other areas. For example, Apple was downgraded. Cisco was downgraded. And this weighed on the tech sector. So now you got the tech sector getting hit. You got some big names getting hit. You got Costco getting slammed. It had a decent report, but there was some weakness that you could find throughout it. And then we also saw that their revenues were a little bit below what people have thought they should be. But the more important thing here is, and this is something we've been talking about for a while, the thing to watch for is that they saw a margin compression. And this is due to supposedly higher merchandising costs, higher prices to sell their products. And that really was pretty ugly. Now, for the week now, even though we saw that this was a bad day on Friday and the month is pretty ugly, the week wasn't, it was terrible, but not that terrible. The S&P was down about 1.3%, the Dow Jones down 1.2%, and the NASDAQ was down 0.8%. And some of the things that you saw throughout the week were these lurching markets. I mean, really lurching, where news headlines have been coming out, and as a lot of people are talking about, naming it it's like kind of walking through a headline minefield. Because we saw a variety of tweets and comments about, the China deals are moving forward. Even in fact, we saw something out of China that they're temporarily reducing down the tariffs on imports of American cars from 40% down to 15%. That's a significant move. Only for 3 months until such time as there is or there is not a resolution or a change of the overall tariffs that are being implemented by the U.S. So they're going to be doing this from now through, I think it's March 1st. So just all around, it was pretty ugly. There was some massive losses in the transportation average, about 4.4% for the week. The financials continue to sell off. As I mentioned at the top, Goldman Sachs has now given back all of its gains, all, and then some, from the election. That stock looks miserable. And there's some things why they're probably getting hit harder than other areas, although the financials are not looking good in general. But there's some reasons, they got that, that overhang from what's going on in Asia, with the potential for their inclusion and possibly, may have to disgorge some profits. So there's something going on there. We also saw that another important item this week or last week was that President, ECB President Mario Draghi spoke, and he talked about how on one hand, they are starting to come out of the emergency stimulus mode. On the other hand, talked about weaker than expected potential. So some of the numbers that we saw out of there already were concerning, and it continues to be the case. And a lot of this probably has to do with the continuation of the tariffs, the general slowdown that is causing in many areas around the world. As well as the fact that it's just so long you can have this growth engine going. And if you think about it, here's something to really consider. What if, just for laughs here, what if we did not have that major corporate tax cut that was recently implemented. That tax cut goosed corporate profitability dramatically. And already we did see that nice boost in the stock market because of it, leading up into it, and then just after it, and then things start to slow down. What if we didn't have that here? We would probably be in a very similar circumstance to what we're seeing in Europe, Asia, emerging markets. Now, part of that is due to the fact that without that tax cut, it makes U.S. companies that much more desirable to invest in because their profitability expanded dramatically. So possibly money has come out of other areas, other sectors around the world, ex-U.S., and brought back here. Kind of a repatriation of the investments. So if you think about that and you really consider how it is that the American stock, you know, markets and the U.S. economy have been holding up in the face of all of the slowing economic backdrop of what we've seen around the world, there is a pretty good likelihood that it's due to the fact that a lot of money was taken out of those other areas and brought here with the idea that this market here in the U.S. will be much stronger moving forward. And that probably did two things. Probably helped us here, as we know, and it probably hurt them over there, wherever over there is. So we saw some headlines that were pretty good last week. We saw the excitement that there's going to be this, you know, drop in the tariffs temporarily. I think it's going to be March 31st that the tariffs, the temporary tariffs, between January 1st and March 31st, there's going to be a reduction of the tariffs from by 25%, from 40% down to 15% on imported cars into China from the U.S. And this is a bit of a peace offering, a sign of goodwill from China that is hoping that, okay, here's a little something. We're going to be buying some soybeans as well. Maybe that will give you a little bit of impetus to believe that, okay, we can work with you. So on that, there was some really good excitement. Hey, wow, that's good. So we had, and that lasted a day. It wasn't enough to really get beyond the fact that even if we do have some kind of a resolution to this, let's just say, I don't know, maybe in February, let's just throw that date out. In February, not down to the wire, which is probably going to go down to, and then we're going to have problems. But in February, a lot of the damage still has been done around the world, here and there. We saw a really good move on. Again, headlines have been moving things dramatically. It's kind of a reflection of what kind of market condition we're in. We're in a bear market condition now. Does that mean 20% or 10%? I'm not talking about the amount of money that we're down or percent that we're down for any stock or any market. We're in a bear market condition. Sentiment is very poor. People are pulling money. As a matter of fact, we saw with the biggest outflow of equity funds last week from the mutual funds and ETF universe that we've seen in, I think, ever. It was like $39 billion or something like that overall. But we also saw some really crazy things happening where the Senate comes in and says, you know, this whole Khashoggi thing, the Saudi Arabian link up with it. And who's the one that said, yes, do this, you know, and it went back to Saudi Arabia. And even though President Trump says it's not and whatever is going on there. Right after that, Saudi Arabia said, you know what, we're slashing production. And oil prices skyrocketed. It's up like 4%. And again, the next day, tail back. So we're seeing like the energy sector get hurt on that. And real estate sectors continue to see a little bit of a slowdown as rates supposedly are going to be at least elevated or higher than they've been. A lot of people are pulling their money out of real estate. And then we had the energy stocks get whipsawed as crude was actually down 2.5% for the week. It ended at 51.25. So even though there was a tough week, even though we saw some tough days, even though some particular names actually got hit, in the end, the information technology sector was down slightly, and utilities were actually positive, communications were positive, and we saw actually a little bit of a slight widening in the spreads for treasuries. That was good. Now, what else happened? Well, just to get a little bit more refined on some of this, we saw that in China there was a slowdown in their pretty much all the numbers. I mean, except for fixed investments, but other than that, everything slowed down. That was a real concern. We saw that in the Eurozone, some of the latest manufacturing numbers had slowed to the weakest point in 4 years. And there's a lot of areas that are just slowing down and almost coming to a halt. And France also, we saw that they're getting into an area of, I would say, you know, we have both growth and slowing, right? So we have, you know, when growth starts to slow and we get some of these PMI numbers, these manufacturing index numbers, you get into this line. And the line in the sand is always about, you know, it's 50. That's what we call it. 50, over 50 is where we see growth happening at a continuation of that. And when we see below 50, we see negative growth. You know, we say slowing. So right now, France is seeing a pretty, you know, and there's a lot going on there, but a pretty significant slowdown as well. Japan seemed to, you know, pretty much be going along their merry way, and their numbers have been doing pretty good, and a variety of surveys out of Japan have been good as well. So that's good. Now, what's coming up next week? Because that was a lot. I mean, there was a lot happening last week that, you know, no wonder why markets were, you know, having fits and spurts in every direction and investors are taking money out of equities and why we're seeing that sentiment is so low right now. There is a lot of things happening that are creating tremendous cross currents. On top of that, the black cloud of tariffs remains intact with no change. So when you look at all of this and you kind of add it up, there is, I think, no question that until things settle out a little bit, I'll tell you, while the VIX was only at about 21.5, 22 at the close of Friday, which you would have thought it probably would have should have popped up a bit, it is staying elevated for a pretty good period of time right now. And the idea there is that there will be the continuation of significant volatility over the not only the near term, but at least for the next few weeks. Until we can see, and this is going to be the big tell, put the VIX aside, put everything else aside, until we can see the movements on an intraday basis calm down. And what I mean by that is this. If you want to just look at the closing numbers of, let's just call the S&P 500, and you see that, oh, Monday, it was up 0.2%. Tuesday, it was down 0.2%. And Wednesday, it was flat. That's one thing. That's something that I want to see. I want to see a continuation, or I want, no, not continuation because it hasn't started yet, but I want to see a slowdown in the daily closing percent changes that are wide, number one. Number two, I want to look at the daily action. So if we have a day like we've seen where the markets are down, you know, 2%, the Dow is down 500 points, and then by the end of the day, it finishes flat. On one hand, that's good. On the other hand, that does not give me the incentive to blindly say, coast is clear. Let's go back to doing what we do. Put money to work in this sector or that sector or whatever it may be. That is still a very volatile circumstance that could really bring a lot of problems. Because as we've seen this week, while we did get a few times where markets were down pretty hard, came back dramatically, or they were up really well, but they came down right back down. And in the end, we saw that the markets were down for the week. I want to see that daily volatility shrink. I want to see the markets open up flat. Down a little bit, up a little bit, and then either crawl a little bit higher or fall softly throughout the day. Once we get that kind of signal where we can see that going on for a good period of time and then add back some key support levels that are important that maybe the indices or a stock is holding, or the VIX or and the VIX starts coming down to a level of, let's just say 15 or less for a period of time, not just one day and then spikes again or drops and then spikes again. That's when the entire sentiment is showing a change. Because the reactions that we're seeing right now to all these news items, and some of them are terribly exacerbated, way off the reservation, so much greater than should be. You see a little thing come out about how there may be some movement in China due to the fact that starting this day, and the markets move up 1% on that and then back off the next day. It makes no sense. So either investors are getting really crazy about buying on things, trading intraday, and the algos are really firing quickly, the high-frequency traders, everything is firing in a way that's much more exacerbated than it should be. And until that slows down, you got to be cautious. Now, you may say to me, Andrew, but I'm investing for the next 30 years. If you have a portfolio that you have a long-term time horizon on, some of this really doesn't matter as much. As long as you have the allocation set up properly, according to your particular risk level, your term time horizon, and exactly aligned to your overall desires as a diversified portfolio. Because in there, you may have some equities and you may have some fixed income. You may have a broad range of different types of assets in different areas and sectors. You may have some commodities and real estate, and you may have some alternatives, whatever you may have. But that's a different discussion than an all stock portfolio, individual stock buying, where there are landmines all over the place. Different from a trader that has, you know, a swing trader mentality that, you know, thinks, oh, I want to buy in here. And, you know, if it holds, I'll hold it for a while. Not because you're going to get smoked. What's going to happen is you're going to enter into a position, put a stop down 4 or 5%, whatever your level is, and you're going to get kicked out. The volatility lends itself to blowing out positions very quickly. Now, if in fact you do get something right on the low and you happen to ride it up for the next, you know, 10% on a quick move, okay, that's great. But if you get it right in the middle and you have a 5% stop on the downside or a stop somewhere around there, you can get kicked out very quickly. And then you may not get back in. It may all of a sudden change your entire sentiment and you may not want to get involved. And that's just bad. So for your own sanity, you need to make some rules. You need to come up with some processes. You need to come up with some kind of written procedure that says, hey, you know, if we get this, if we get that, if we get over the 50-day moving average, I don't know, I'm just making things up here. You know, if we get a turn up from here with lower volatility, and of course it confirms with the Dow transport, blah, 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 whatever you want to say. Okay, that's fine. Utilize that and that will give you some better scenarios. But to blindly start throwing things at a market that you're not quite sure of what kind of level of volatility you're involved in for a shorter term trader, not somebody that's investing their IRA for the next 25 years, that we're not really concerned about these interim noise necessarily. Yes, you want to buy it at a lower price if possible. So there may be some opportunities there. You may want to rotate your portfolio and get out of some of the things that have really performed well for you and push it into and rotate and rebalance back into something that is going to be maybe more beneficial. Or, for example, for many of our clients, depending on risk factors, et cetera, we've actually increased our emerging markets and foreign exposure very recently and reduced down our U.S. exposure, taking out the profits that we've recently had and rotated it there. Took out and changed the dynamic of our fixed income portfolio because of some concerns we have in one particular sector. Did that at a really timely point, took out about 60% of the position. We still liked the position, generally speaking, but you know what? We said we had such a great run over this time period. You know what? We have some concerns about it for these reasons. You know what? It's time to take out and take off something from the table. All right, I was mentioning we'll get to the week ahead here. So let's talk about that for a second. So the big news, the big thing that's going to be happening, the really big, big news, is that the Fed is going to have a two-day meeting And we have some, again, 75, 85% rate of probability that is going to increase the rate 25 basis points at this meeting. I think that's midweek here. So it's a two-day meeting, and then I think Wednesday is the date. Now, probably what we're going to see, from what I can tell at least, is that while we may have this 25 basis point increase, I think there's going to be a little bit of a walk back from the expectation that we're going to have three or more next year. In other words, the walk back is not necessarily going to be, oh, we're not going to do this. But what they're going to start talking about is looking at the actual information to guide them a little bit more clearly about where their rate should be. They're going to do, I think they're going to do a review of kind of where they are and look at, okay, we've been on a rate hiking process that has been pretty much just on autopilot. Now what we want to do is we want to really be data dependent. We want to look at the information moving forward to see how much more we really need to get towards that neutral or so area. Remember, we're still not at the neutral area. The fact is that everybody's complaining about, oh, rates have gone up so much, and they have. But we're still not neutral. In other words, they're still accommodative. They need to get at least towards neutral now, with the unemployment rate being what it is, the inflation rate being pretty solid towards the 2% range, the growth of the economy being as it is. It makes sense. You don't want to get crazy with this. So I think they're going to start suggesting that, well, they want to look at this a little bit closer. That may be really good, especially this time of year for markets. And we're also going to be getting some information on from the Bank of England, the Bank of Japan. There's a lot of stuff happening next week with the banks, with the central banks, that is. And, you know, we know that because of some of the softer numbers that we've seen around the world in terms of manufacturing and generally the, you know, the growth of their economies, that there may be a lot more dovish talk out of many of these central banks. I think we're going to get back to a coordinated dovish time probably towards the end of this year into the beginning of 2019. But then at the same time, I think we're going to see a real rollover of some of these economic indicators here in the U.S. and earnings slowdown. So that's going to be a big issue. There's not a lot of earnings coming out next week. We have FedEx, we have Oracle, we have Micron Technologies. There's a few other ones out there. There's going to be also some more information out of Nike next week. But in terms of economic data, we're going to see on Monday the December Empire manufacturing number, the housing market index from builders. On Tuesday, building permits, housing starts, some oil inventory information at the end of the day on the API side. Wednesday, applications, which have been coming down. But last week, actually, we showed a little bit better applications on the mortgages. Existing home sales and then crude. But on Wednesday in the afternoon at, I think it's 2 o'clock, the FOMC, the Fed decision will be then. But I'm going to be watching home sales because they've been really taking a hit lately. And we'll see if these rates are really causing some more problems than we think. On Thursday, we'll see initial claims, Philly Fed, which I find an important thing to look at. Some leading indicators. Friday, we're going to see the PCE prices, personal income and spending. The PCE prices, personal consumption expenditure prices. This is another read on inflation, an important number. And then we're going to be going back and forth on this whole shutting down the government thing. I'm sure we're going to see headlines all throughout the week. We're shutting down the government. We're not shutting down the government. We're shutting down the government. We're not shutting down the government. I think there will probably be a temporary resolution. Nobody wants to shut down the government, especially this time of year. I know President Trump has talked hardball about this. And I'm going to shut it down if you don't agree to my wall. But I just think that, you know, let's let it go a few more weeks, get a temporary resolution to continue the, you know, government keeping it open. And I think that would be the right thing to do. That's pretty much it. We got some other international stuff too. Now, a lot of that, just to kind of get back to this and a quick disclosure. I am not, briefing is not advertising on the show. I'm just telling you this because I want you to be better investors and have really good information at your fingertips. A lot of the information I just talked about was coordinated from a lot of the information that's available on the briefing.com, Briefing Trader, and they do just a great job. So I kind of went through a lot of that, you know, just the highlights and then told you what I thought about it. But a lot of that stuff's on there. So you can follow that. That was part of their week in review and weekly outlook commentaries, their earnings commentary and outlook, their economic outlook meetings, central banks. There's all different parts that you can pull this information from, but invaluable. I mean, think about all the information we just went through right there. And on top of it, you know, of course, looking at, I also brought in some information on my own charts and looking at where things were, but you know, that is all a great hub for you to gain insight. So check that out. I just want you to be better investors and more up to date on some of the core stuff that doesn't have a slant politically, you know, which is a big problem these days. Let's get to a couple of questions here. Of course, I mentioned that through the end of the year, listeners that send in questions will pick one random question per week. And that person will get a copy of my book, The Disciplined Investor, Essential Strategies for Success, which you can get these days somewhere on Amazon. But more importantly, the audio version of my book is also available on Amazon and audible.com. So we had a couple of questions come in here. One guy wrote me, Brian Lawson, he's telling me a little bit about that he lives in South Africa. And I'm mentioning that I'm going there next summer, at least as of right now. I have it all planned. So he was giving me some really good information on this. And let's see. So he says, he was giving me all sorts of things about the taxis and the appliances and shavers, and we drive on the left. And so it's going to be all sorts of problems there. But he says, now a question. What did he say to you? For any newbie, wannabe investor, what is the minimum amount to invest with? I don't know if you're asking me the question of how much it is to invest with us or how much it is to invest just out there. So let me give you kind of both sides of that. So if you're a newbie investor, if you're just new at this whole game and you want to invest, there's a lot of ways that you can put your money to work. There's apps, there's mutual funds, there's ETFs, there's all these different ways that you can invest in things. The first thing you want to do is make sure that you have enough of a fund, a rainy day fund, an emergency fund, if you will, in your bank, somewhere liquid, somewhere that, you know, okay, I'm good there. If I need to pay a bill, if I need to do, I'm good. On the other hand, beyond that, you want to look at adding to IRAs or tax. I'm not sure what you have in South Africa, but generally speaking, you want to add to tax benefited retirement plans. And then beyond that, also you want to do, and that you could do with any amount of money probably. I mean, if you have a few thousand dollars, you can buy some stocks. You can buy, you know, one or two, three positions. You may want to do it in a pooled type of investment like a mutual fund, an ETF. But whatever you do, you can do it with any amount of money you want. I would just encourage you to start. Now, you may get it wrong at first. You may get a little dinged. You don't have to be the most aggressive thing. You can buy some real core positions to begin with. Buy a few shares. Buy a few shares into an ETF. This way, at least you get started. But the faster you start, the better off you'll be long-term, way down the road. The other question that came in today is from Dave Schaefer. He says, what do you make of the continued outperformance of the cloud and software as a service sector? Workday, Twilio. Despite the mega cap high value tech names being sold off, why is money being rotated into defensive names and simultaneous these ultra high PE names? Is the growth really that good to warrant these prices? Now, that's a good question, but some of this has to also do with the fact that some of these are core processes that run the underlying web or some part of business that many businesses really integrate very strongly into what they're doing. Twilio is a great example. You know, they have the ability to link up and utilize things like if you're doing appointment reminders and maybe using their web-to-text process through an API that will send a text out to somebody through an automation that, hey, you have an appointment next week at 3 o'clock. Or maybe some other kind of web-to-text or, you know, internet-based texting system or phone, the backbone of phone, or maybe meetings, or 100 other possible variations of that for a company that's doing some business on the web. So those things are helping, and it's kind of a cash cow, so that's good. You know, it all depends on how much being used and obviously how good business is. But I think the whole software as a service also, I think people think that this is also a monthly process that you're paying, and that the change that we saw from like Microsoft and Adobe and a variety of other players out there that are now doing like a leasing of their software rather than a buy, and that, you know, that $10 a month, not so expensive versus paying, you know, $395 for the program. It's much easier for you to get into. And how long does it take till you finally fed up? You're like, all right, cancel that $10 per month. It takes a while. So I think that it is looked upon as a safer deal in some regards. And that's maybe why that they're doing it. All right, let's mix this up here. These two questions here quickly. Do we have any others? We got one there. We'll save it to next week. And then we got a few more. If you want to ask a question, just go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com and go over to the Ask Andrew section. Very simple. And just click it and ask a question, anything you have. And we'll got a couple more books to give away through the end of the year. So this one is for Dave Schaefer. So Dave, do me a favor, send me over your address, your mailing address. We'll send you a copy of The Disciplined Investor, Essential Strategies for Success. We're going to wrap it up right there. Thanks for joining me. I hope you have a great weekend and spending some great time before the year doing some reflection, as we've talked about, spending a little time looking at what you did right, what you got wrong, providing some things that you want to do, learn, and some areas that you can be successful with next year. You got to set it out in goals first, and then hopefully your process will align with those goals moving forward. Again, thanks for joining me, and I'll see you next week.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.